Hello and welcome to the 2014 OA Birthday Party Workshop. My name is Andrea and I'm your moderator for this workshop. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. During this two-hour workshop, we will have OA members who will share their experience, strength, and hope on the topic, Freedom from Fear. There will be a question and answer portion following our speakers. Volunteers will be passing an Ask It basket. Can somebody hold up the Ask It basket? That's it. Okay, so it'll be circulating to collect the questions you may have for our panel. Also, there will be a time provided after the question and answer for workshop participants to write on this topic. 3-minute pitches will follow when members may choose to share their writing with the group or pitch on their experience recovering from fear. If members choose to share, please remember the OA birthday party events are being recorded. Please join me in warmly welcoming our first speaker, Charlotte.
Okay, I don't know if the clapping helps, but I'm glad. I'm glad I'm here, but wow, there are a lot of people here. So I'm a little afraid, but that's perfect, right? Good topic. And some people I know and a lot of people I don't know. And, whew, okay. And this morning I said the Serenity Prayer a few times just to get myself here. I'm not really a morning person, but you know, when they ask, you come, right? When they ask, you always come. So, okay. So I'm thinking about fear. And when I first came into the rooms, a little less than 3 years ago, I sat like in the back at Serenity Sunday in Beverly Hills in LA, and I basically just cried for the whole time. Did not go up for a newcomer chip. I was just so scared. I think my whole life, I wake up in the middle of the night with just unaccounted for fear. You know, you just wake up and you're just afraid and you don't know where it comes from. And that's how I live my life a lot. Not so much anymore, thank God. And I was thinking about, okay, what areas of my life do I have fear? Have I had fear that you might relate to? So it's pretty much all areas of my life, right? So let's talk about around being fat. That was really scary, being really, really fat. I've kept off about 70 or 75 pounds. I would like to say I kept off the 100 pounds I lost, but some has come back. Okay, so that's very interesting for me, who's like a perfectionist, and I'm sure a lot of us here can relate to that. We want to be perfect. That's why we mess up with food somehow. But I basically had a lot of fear about, am I going to keep getting fatter and fatter and fatter? What I noticed is I was getting so fat that my work was suffering, in that people were looking at me differently, and there was a lot of prejudice. And that did not feel very good. So I was afraid it was just getting worse, and I'd wake up one day, and I wouldn't be able to move. And so around food, there's that issue, and around being fat and weight, because I used to be a very thin person, until I wasn't. Do you know that? Some of you might know that feeling. And I didn't notice it coming as I was going up so much. I think I just ignored it. And because I was scared to look at myself and look at what was happening to me. So, I just know that some of you might resonate with these words. And then actually about, I had a lot of fear in other areas of my life that weren't related, I thought, to food or weight. And it's you know, it was about money, just having enough financial security, having not having to go month to month or week to week or worry about, do I have enough money to pay my rent, to do the things I want to do. And then I had a lot of fear around, oh, relationships, because when I started getting heavier and heavier, I think it was a way to protect myself, in a sense, from not being close to anyone. And it was safer that way because there was too much pain and hurt in the past. And so, in a way, I justified getting heavier because I knew I was protecting myself, but the truth was I was just getting unhealthy and more unhappy and more in fear. And so then I was afraid I would never have a relationship again, and then I was afraid I would, and then... So basically, anything you could say, is there something I've left out in terms of what else could I be afraid of, you know? I was afraid of going out and going to parties or going to gatherings because people would see what I look like and I'd have to face it. And that was not so fun. So the scary thing, again, was going back and waking up in the middle of the night. But it's... And how I reacted to things, because I was in fear about so many things, I don't know if this happens to you, but I would react a lot in anger to cover up the fear. So I appeared very confident in some ways and very strong, but I was really like the scared little girl, you know, going back to all kinds of childhood fun things, which were horrible. I always said, I once said to my mother, thank you for being my mother, because if you weren't, I wouldn't be such a good child therapist, which is what I am. And she said, you're welcome, and she didn't realize it was because I had such a horrible childhood that I could understand what people have gone through and be very empathetic, and I kind of came out of it. But I didn't really come out of it because I had all these fears and I wasn't doing that well on a real personal level. So when I came to the OA meetings, it was because I was so desperate and so afraid, and I had heard about OA probably 10 years before, right? Some of us. And I thought, no, that's not for me. I don't need that. It's so cliche. I'm like embarrassed to even share this with you because I like to be cliche because I want to be special and, you know, few of my character defects are spilling out. But the truth is, things kind of changed. I mean, I'm not perfect. No, I'm not. And but what really helped me release myself from fear or start recovering from the fear that was in my life was God. And I know people talk in meetings about how when they came in, a higher power was difficult, God was difficult, they didn't believe. But I always had a personal connection to God. So in a way I thought, oh, this is not a big deal. I believe in God. I have a connection. But the truth was I didn't ever turn things over to God. I didn't look to God for guidance in every part of my life. And I don't do it 100% now either, but I do it more and more. And I think that's really the answer for me, is to really pay attention to that little voice, that God voice that's inside. Because if I do, then I really get what seems to me a purer truth, a higher truth. And what's really helped in that respect is to be very honest. What my sponsor said initially, one of the great things about me, I love hearing great things, I don't know about anyone else, but was that I was very, very honest. You know, I was honest about my food, I was honest about my feelings, and I thought that was the only way to do this. I could see how I slip and try to fool myself a little bit, because how else did that weight start to creep back on, because I wasn't being honest with what was happening. But at least I'm on a better path. So when I listen to God, when I ask, all I do is ask for help or for guidance, And I just get what to do, or I feel safer, or I feel like things are going to work out, I can handle it, or even when I go outside to meet a client, I might say, I don't know what to do, God. Please help me with what to say. And if I listen to that voice, then the fear and the anger doesn't come out so much. And before, I used to have a lot of justified anger. Anyone have that? And I have, like, notes. Do you think I remember anything? No. But I always remember what my, again, I love these sayings we have in this group or in all the groups, progress, not perfection. So if I could see a little bit of change, if I could see where I was before, which wasn't so pleasant, I feel better with the weight. I know I've been able to let go of a lot of weight, and even though some has come back on, I believe that God doesn't want me to be fat, you know. And I feel that what I'm going through now, which is a little bit regression and moving back up or back in a better place, I feel it's going to help me help others. So, like when people, if I would have just been, oh, I lost 100 pounds, actually I lost 105 pounds, but if I, and I kept it off, well, some people might say, I can't do that. But now I could really inspire you because I kind of messed up a little bit and I'm not giving up. Because it easily could just keep getting worse and worse and worse. And so, and I never broke my abstinence, which is no chocolate bars. That's because that's my sponsor's abstinence. And chocolate is like the best drug in the world, right? I once, actually, a while ago, I walked over fire. You know those hot coals that they have? I know, isn't that crazy? And it was actually in Spain, and my Spanish wasn't very good at that time, not that it is now, but it was at a, you know, one of these workshops, and normally they put you in like this trance, you know, like a hypnotic trance so you could do anything, and there wasn't any time because the coals were ready, so he said, you know, just, it's all in your head, just go. So I actually went across with a friend. And it was pretty long. It was like from this whole stage area. And nothing happened. And I thought, gosh, if I could walk over hot coals, I could conquer chocolate. But at that time, I couldn't. I really couldn't. Chocolate was stronger. And that's the one thing that God lifted from me was the fear about chocolate. I used to be afraid of walking down certain aisles in the supermarket. Because I'm basically a snob, I shop at Whole Foods, which is called Whole Paycheck or something, I don't know. So I would get like the best gluten-free chocolate wafer cookies, and I would get really nice frozen yogurt, you know, like a pint. It wasn't a quart, wasn't a gallon, it was a pint, but if you do that every day for a while. So then, and then there's another supermarket near me that has a whole aisle of like chocolate bars and great, great chocolate bars. And so I would be afraid when I came into the program and gave up chocolate bars. I'd be afraid to walk down those aisles. I would like start to shake. And now I can walk down. I'm so excited. I can walk down those aisles and not grab the chocolate or the, and it's really because of God. Now I would like God to lift my my fear around other kinds of food. And my fear of being the best I could be. But I'm asking, I have to be, I think there's a thing, we have to be willing or something, you know, for God to help. So I have to question, am I really willing? I think I am, but I guess I'm not totally willing because it's very scary. It's like how things are now, how I would like them to be, am I willing to take the steps to get there? Maybe. I hope so. I don't really want to come back over and over again. You know, I kind of believe in us reincarnation or whatever, I don't know. Although, with all the technology around, it might be nice to come back another time to see what's going to happen. But, my goal is to be to reach my, what God wants me to do, whatever my destiny is, who I'm supposed to help. And I guess who I'm supposed to help includes myself. Because it's really easy. I think there's another program for that that people are saying I should go to just help others instead of yourself, you know. But because it's always easier to focus on someone else than ourselves. I mean, that's pretty obvious, but not for all of us. So, okay, so good. So now I have no fear about walking down the aisles. That's a big thing. And I trust more and more in God and asking for, and I have no problem in saying his help. I don't know. Probably because when I went to a group Jewish and maybe a little Jubu, you know, Buddhism thrown in as I got an adult. But so that was one time when I went to Jewish camp. I'd go away for 3 weeks, and there was one time nobody was, like, beating me up or yelling at me all day long. So, like, other kids would cry when they would leave their parents going to camp. I would cry coming home. So, and I would be left alone all the time when I was a kid, and I had a big brother who I adored, and he would say, I'll watch you every other night. So I'm, like, 4 years old walking on the streets of Brooklyn. And they would play games in my neighborhood, like hide the garrison belt, which is a really fat leather belt. And then whoever found the belt first could beat everyone else up if they didn't get to the wall. So, you know, at 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, it's quite an interesting experience. But I would wear, like, crinolines, I guess, so it wouldn't hurt so much. So we had, it makes you strong growing up in New York City, you know, if you make it through. I have no idea why I'm telling you this, but it is funny. But I think because that's where fears could start, you know, maybe some fears about safety and being secure and being able to soothe myself in other ways besides my imagination and food, because I'd probably leave my body a lot and go somewhere else where it was nicer. So, okay, I know why. It's coming back to this. So when I went to synagogue, that was also a safe place. So nobody was beating me up or yelling at me or pulling my hair or anything like that. So that's why I have no problem with God myself personally, and I think of God as a male, even though I think really it's everything and male, female, whatever. So I think we're supposed to just, as we know, just a higher power, whatever you believe in, whether it's a grain of sand or the ocean or just something to help you through, that there's something greater than ourselves, that we're not the answer for everything. But I think of God as being in me, like that little voice that I ignore a lot. Like, don't go for the frozen yogurt. Or, if you have frozen yogurt, don't put a ton of almonds on it. You know, so just hearing that wisdom and centering myself. And look, sometimes I listen, sometimes I don't, but it's okay. I think the idea is just to get better and to keep going and, as people say, to keep coming back. So the other thing, so now so much about clients, if I have a full schedule, great. And if all of a sudden five people disappear, I don't freak out as much as before. So to me, that's a good thing because I trust that God will provide. I'm supposed to help people. Maybe I help them enough. Maybe I was only supposed to be in their life for a little bit of time. That's okay. So it's all about, to me, accepting and believing that God has a plan. I might not know the plan, but I trust. I trust in God. I trust because I have to. And some of my more intellectual friends would say I was crazy and there's no God. And you know. But what could I do? Everyone's different. We just have to go with what is meaningful to us. And then relationship. So I lose all this weight. And what happens? Guys start hitting on me. And my friend was going to Israel, and I said, okay, could you put a little thing in the wall, that the Western Wall, you put little notes to God? And I asked her, could you put a little note for him to send me a guy? And she said, yeah, I'll do that, but why don't you just go on Match.com? So, okay, I did that. And then it was really interesting. The first guy was, like, too mean. It was like Goldilocks. The second guy was too boring. Third guy was really exciting. And so I went with him. But that's a whole other story, right? There must be a workshop for that. I think there's one at So it was really funny because I was so scared. I had lost weight, right? But when you lose a lot of weight, you have all this disgusting hanging skin. It wasn't totally disgusting, but it was pretty disgusting. So I like, when we were going to be intimate the first time, I bought this really expensive, like, nightgown that was going to hide things. And, you know, I figured I'd just keep it on. Just like, and you know what? I kept it on for like 3 seconds. It was such a waste of like a lot of money. like $275, a lot of money. It was crazy. But so then there's a whole thing when you have some kind of relationship, at least for me, there's all kinds of issues that go along with it. And I thought, I'm not going to be in a relationship until I finish all my steps. Yeah, well, I guess God had another plan, because I'm still working on them. But, and this is almost 3 years. This is another thing. It's like a lesson for me. I wasn't perfect. I didn't go through everything really quickly. And I'm like confessing to you. I'm supposed to be inspiring you. I don't know if that's... But I'm learning to trust that there's a reason for things to happen. There's growth. It's okay to not be perfect and have someone care about me or... love me, or, I mean, even though I don't quite understand why, but. So I think it's okay. I'm much better about it, and I'm learning every day. And I don't know about how you are with all that. It's to live in an imperfect world, my own imperfect world, and to not have fear. I'd say I went from like 110, 120% fear to down to about 30%. So that's pretty good, right? Yeah. It's not perfect, but I think for me, the answer, for me, it's God. That's the step, to turn it over. And every time I do that more, I feel more freedom. It's not like I'm giving up my responsibility, but I'm doing my best and trusting that things happen for a reason and being excited to see what's going to happen next. So... I don't think that I'll keep getting fatter. I might. I hope not. Because I really think this is for me to learn that sometimes it takes a lot of faith and hard work. And it's not just believing in God, but it's feeling I could take the steps to get there. And I'm doing this so many... It feels like I'm a new person, and then I really... don't have that much to offer people, but it's almost 3 years, so I'm not that new. And I think coming to meetings and coming to this and going to, there was a spiritual retreat for women that was wonderful for a couple of years, didn't happen this year, and just reading the literature and following whatever you can in the tools. Do you think I could read that? Is it time's up? Are you telling me time's up? Well, I'm so grateful because I'm like done. I'm done. I have nothing more to say. So thank you so much for listening, being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Shelley, for sharing your experience and strength. Now I will ask the Ask It Basket volunteers to begin passing the baskets to collect your questions for the question and answer portion of this workshop. Please address your question to the panel members, either to Charlotte, whom you've just heard, or to Phyllis, whom you're going to hear next, and keep your focus on the topic. Now, please join me in welcoming our second speaker, Phyllis, who will...
Good morning. My name is Phyllis, and I'm a chunky, drunky, junkie. I have been clean, sober, and abstinent since May 20th, 1972. This program has become a part of my life, so much a part of my life, that it's like religion, like some people become passionate about their religion. That's how I feel about the program. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about fear, just in case anybody here still has some. Originally, they came up when they talked about the cavemen, and they said that the cavemen would go out and either fight or flight. I made a change to that. It's fight, flight, or bite. A fear-based person does not, at least for me, does not understand why I eat, why I drink, and why I use drugs. No understanding of that at all, except it's their fault. And you come into the world as a perfect baby. A baby, when it's born, is perfect. And then we come along and we teach it stuff. We teach it how to be angry, how to be fearful, how to be annoying, and so on, and how to be hungry. So what happens is that you go along until you come to a point that you decide that you want to make a change. Now, when I came into the program, I don't think I decided to make a change. It was just another thing that I was going to try and prove that it doesn't work. Well, I was wrong. Again, I've been wrong a lot. And I came into the program, and I started working the program, and I found out fear and anger are the same coin, flip side. Same thing. I get angry because I have fears, and I'm fearful because I'm angry. And that was the whole term of my living. That was the way it was. And so I came into the program, and they said, you're going to do a first step where you're going to admit that you're powerless. I said, I'm not too sure about that. That's very definite. That's very scary. That kind of thing takes commitment. And then I said, I have nothing to lose. I'll give them 30 days, and at the end of 30 days, I'll leave. At which point they said they'll refund my fat and misery. So I gave it the best shot. I gave it with the stamina that I used to put into eating, that I used to put into drinking and doing drugs. And I said, okay, I am powerless over food, but I'm not so sure, again, that my life is unmanageable. I was a single mother, three small children, a house, a car, a dog, a mortgage, and I was working my backside off. It was tough. And I finally decided that my life was unmanageable. My checkbook looked like hell. My closet looked like hell. The top drawer in my kitchen looked like World War III had started there. And I became aware of all of the chaos in my life. And then I had to talk about a higher power. Well, you know, that too. I was not sure of all of that stuff. I was never brought up with religion. And on my own, I think I knew that there was a God, but he was always too busy to help me. And he certainly wasn't going to help me with lunch. And I made the decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand him. It needs willingness, it needs commitment, and it needs honesty. And I say, why do we hold back those character defects, or character, I'm sorry, the other way, the strength of character, and take the other stuff instead? We get scared. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid I might be successful. I was afraid that I'd fail. I was afraid that it just goes on and on. As a matter of fact, I wrote them down, and I said, oh, my God, I got to do another inventory. I was taught to be compulsively self-reliant. And I just couldn't figure out how this was going to work, which is probably a good thing, because if I figured it out, like I figured everything else out in my life, I probably would not have done it, or I never would have completed. And I don't complete. I go to meetings. I listen. I listen because you never know when you're going to hear something that's going to make you feel better. That doesn't mean that the character defects go away. What happens is the fear and anger, which for me were the primary character defects, and they don't go away. They just hang around, and every once in a while, they look for the opportunity to jump on me. And when they do, I get a little frightened, because it's like, I think, I thought I was finished with that, but I'm never going to be finished with it. And God just puts it there to keep me on my toes, you know, and to make me understand why I must eat a moderate meal, you know, why I eat an abstinent meal next time, and why I do all of that. So the fear is talked about an amazing amount of time in the program. It's almost on every page. There are promises in the program that talk about financial insecurity. I've been there. And they talk about chaos with relationships, and I've been there. And you know what? I'm still here. I am still here, and I still believe that the answer for many of us, I don't want to say all of us, then I sound like a preacher, but that's all right, I am a preacher. I really am. It's so important in my life. Are you willing to let go of a character defect? That's all you have to be. That's all you have to say. Am I willing to let go of fear? At the beginning, I thought if I let go of fear and anger, I would become invisible, because then I would be thinner, I would not be drinking, and I would not be using drugs, and I don't know that person. And I was afraid of that person. Give it a chance. Give it a chance. We were just talking before we came in here, and briefly, I had a serious fall 4 weeks ago. My face hit the floor, and I broke the bones and my nose and all around. And my colleague, one of my friends, said to me, you know why you're having a speedy recovery? It's because your body is healthy. And you know what? I take that any time now, especially when you get to be 83 years old. You know, you've got to be very careful of how you live your life. And I never, ever, ever would have lived this long. In my family, it was 64 years old, and everybody died. My parents were both gone at that age. They were young people. And everybody had an obsession with food in my family. And they passed it on to me, to my brother. We both had it. And all the other ancillary defects that come with it. So, what am I going to say about fear? Have I ever been afraid? Yes. I was widowed when I was 34 years old. I had 3 kids, a house, and a job. I was scared to death. And one of the people asked me, what do you do? How do you get through the day? I said, I say to God, you got me here, now you've got to get me out. That worked. That worked. I give that away freely. Try that sometimes. And another thing that I found out is that courage is fear that says its prayers. To recognize a fear, to hold it, and to hold it here to your heart, to know what it is and what it does to me, I don't want that. I want to be able to use the best program I ever had. I mean, I went to school forever. And I still got fat. Because when I was a kid, I was fat, ugly, lazy, and stupid. I'm none of those things today. When I got married, I wasn't prepared to be a wife. I wasn't prepared to be a mother. I couldn't do those things. Nobody ever gave me guidelines. I need it written out, 1, 2, 3, and then I know what I can do. And it took me a long time to become a mother to my children. There have been many incidents in my life that were scary. You know them all. You've had them, again, job, relationships, so many factors, bringing up children. And as a result of this program, I'm a very good mother. I really am. I'm a good mother. And I'm going to be great grandma this summer. My sons are all in their 50s. And you know what? They're good people. I was one of the kids on the sidewalks of New York as well. I grew up in the Bronx, but of course you didn't know that from my accent. I've lived in San Diego now for 35 years. You would think that some of that would go away, but it can't take the girl out of the city. My kids have a work ethic, have an ability to stand up for who they are. I think they got it from the program. My kids know what it is to say thank you to God when something good happens. I think they got that from the program. What they got from me was my experience, strength, and hope. I told them what I was, what I did, and they said, okay. You know, and just with their heads hanging down. And then I would hear them say to each other, that's fantastic to be able to say, I'm a drug addict, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a compulsive eater. You know which one is worse? Compulsive eating. That is the most difficult of all the compulsions and obsessions that I have had in my life. Because eating is glamorous. You know, people think that's wonderful, go out to eat. And my little story is, I make a shopping list. I then go to the supermarket. I take the stuff off the shelf and put it in my basket. Then I take it out of the basket and put it on the counter. And then I take the bags and put that back into the wagon. I take it home and I unpack the bags and I put the stuff on the shelves. There's a lot of handling food before I really get there. And other people don't recognize that and how difficult that can be for us. You know, like walking down an aisle in the supermarket. That doesn't talk to me anymore. I don't listen. Maybe it does talk to me. I'm not sure about that. But I just don't listen because I know that that will get me into trouble. I have an angel here and the devil here. When the devil gets big, my recovery gets small. When my recovery gets big, the devil shrinks. However, my recovery can die, but my disease can't die. It's going to be there for as long as I'm able to admit it. And I hope that will be long enough time. I haven't looked at my notes to see what I wrote here, if I wrote anything that was important. The group teaches us tolerance and love. It's very difficult to be afraid when you're trying to be tolerant of other people and you're trying to love everybody. I don't like everybody. I'm really an isolationist. I learned that in my disease, and I still like to isolate. I like to read. I like the comfort of my home. I like going to meetings that I want to go to. I like choosing the people that I want to be with. And I want to thank my friend for driving here this morning. We were out of the house at 6:30, and we made great time. But I want to be able to be an individual. I want my kids to say, my mother did, blah, 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 whatever. I want them to say, I will miss her when she's gone. I want them to say, God bless Overeaters Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because without this, I was deeply moved when Roseanne left us a couple of days ago. And I knew her very well. And I've been around here for almost 42 years. That's a long time. That's probably more time than some of you are old, you know. And there was such an energy there for the program. And look what happened to us. You know, it's worldwide. There are people all over who want to know today, freedom from fear. It's a lot of F words. I don't like that. Freedom is to be taken away from the problem. Yeah, freedom from food first. Step one, most important step I ever took. You have freedom from food, and there's not that feeling like you're in your own jail. I'm my prisoner and the jailer. You know, I'm the one that put me there. And if all of the problems that I had in my childhood, whatever they may have been, doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. At some point, I had to put them to bed. It's enough. Doesn't matter anymore. And so I can't blame anybody. In Al-Anon, they say, to blame is to be lame. Whatever. The point is that my recovery is my responsibility. It's not yours. You can't make me better. And you know what? It isn't even God's, because God puts me in the position to be abstinent, and then it's up to me to do it. It's up to me to do it. Nothing more important in my life than program. Thank you very much for listening. Say that I lost 85 pounds and maintaining that for 42 years.
Thank you very much, Phyllis. We will now, I now have some questions and answers from the Ask Basket, and it's passing. If you have a question and you've written it down, just raise your hand and she'll put it in the basket. This part of the workshop, I will read the questions and then one of you may answer them for us. The timekeeper is there, and this session will last for about 20 minutes, and she'll give us a 5-minute timer, okay? Okay. For both ladies, you use such negative terms to describe your younger selves. Disgusting, fat, ugly, lazy, and stupid. Do you think those kinds of words are necessary for recovery? Is there a way to recover without cruel thinking?
We need the microphone.
You can breathe. I think that whatever they did, and they did, there was a whole lot of that kind of talk when I was growing up. For me to realize that 40 years later and say, I'm not that person. I never was. I'm not stupid. I'm not lazy. For a while there, I was a little chubby. But those words were important to me at the time because they defined who I was, and I let others define my identity. What?
Okay, I'll just second that. I think when you're a kid, so much is defined by how people speak about you. You get your identity from your parents or whoever's around you. And so, you know, if you're here, like for me, I heard I was a spoiled brat. Well, I don't know what that means, but I certainly wasn't that because I didn't have anything. So I think then as I grew older, then I could take a look because it's going in, going in, going in. And then I could say, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. But it takes a while to get there. So everyone's different. And maybe there could be recovery without negative words about yourself. But that's where I came from. And that's where my dear person here came from. So that you just have to be honest. I think that's it. Be honest.
Okay. Another question. I have a lot of confusion about what actions to take when I get fearful as well as angry. Also, when others are directing those emotions towards me, what do you suggest?
What do I want to do that's in my heart? You know, this thing that's causing me fear. And you know what? Simple, I think, is just pick up a book and read one of the books or make a telephone call. I call the tools diversionary tactics. You know, that's what you have to get away from that. And if somebody is coming on to you with anger and you're frightened, walk away. You say, I will talk to you later. And then don't forget to talk to them.
Yeah. I think the boundaries are kind of important, but it's really hard if someone's just sending their negative energy, their anger toward you, not to absorb it, especially I think we're so many of us are so sensitive that we just absorb it and it seems to puff out or puffs out after eating to calm the emotion. So if you could be strong enough to say, I'd like to talk to you about this, but not when you're so angry. So, or even on the phone. Even if you can't do that, if you can't be honest like that and be direct, then just say, I got to go. Oops, got to go to the bathroom. Oops. Someone else is calling. I mean, I know we're supposed to be totally honest, but you have to take care of yourself too, so.
This is a question for Charlotte. How does one turn their fear of regaining weight over to our higher power without abdicating my responsibility for what I eat or how much I eat?
I do believe there's free will. So, of course, I am responsible for what I eat and how much I eat. I ask for God's help. I ask for, it's like I'm powerless over this. Please help me eat the best I can. Please help me get healthier. Please help me not hurt myself anymore. And so if I ask for that, then I get guidance. You know, there's like this little voice. Well, the other day I was driving home, so it was very easy. I wanted to stop at the supermarket. Oh, I wanted to go and get some frozen yogurt with almonds and chocolate syrup on it or whatever. And I'm driving and I'm going, there's a voice that's saying, just go home. And I just went home.
The two little things sitting on your shoulder.
What does turning it over to God look like for you? Can you walk us through your process?
When I first started in program, we did a lot of writing. And so I would write it down, which was a good thing to do because when I wrote it down, I saw it much more clearly. And then I had to burn it, which caused a whole riot in my house, and these three little boys come running downstairs, and they say, what are you doing? And I try to explain to them that I'm burning from my program, you know. And next time, and subsequent times when I did it, they would stay upstairs, and I would hear them say, you're burning. And he says, no, you're burning. But sometimes I want to give it away, and I hold it by the tippy, tip, 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 you know. I'm here, God, take this, you know, and I'm not really willing. And it's just that feeling that you know that's not going to work. And if it means about my abstinence, there's nothing more important to me. I mean, I love my children, but nothing more. Abstinence comes first. Without step one, you have nothing after that. 2 to 12, lost.
Sometimes I'll just sit and meditate and close my eyes and then speak to God inside my head. Some people speak outside their head. And so I'll just be very, very sincere and honest. And that really helps. I have to say, I was on a plane not too long ago coming from Switzerland, Swiss chocolate bars. And the stewardess hands me a little chocolate bar. And I take it. And I'm thinking how easy it would be to just give it all away, right? So I put it in the pocket of the, and I left it there. Because I knew that was safer than like thinking, oh, I'll give it to someone else.
Our next question, what are some of the ways you release anger each day? Is it a constant practice or do you have freedom from anger in your life?
No. For me, there is no freedom from anger, but I'll tell you what it is. It's a much more comfortable place because I know what to do. I don't let it get to me in here because then I'll get hungry. I swear to you, I will get hungry. And I just don't want to do that anymore. Anger is... certainly one of those character defects that never goes away because there's always somebody or something out there that's going to do that.
Not to get scientific on us, but when we're angry, the amygdala in our brain inside, it lights up. And what happens when it lights up, that's that fight or flight thing. What happens is it shuts down our frontal lobe where we have logical thinking and you can't think. So when you're angry, you cannot think. So just, if I'm in that state, at least I'm aware of it and try to calm down that amygdala by breathing, by meditating, by moving, just to calm it down so I could think again.
I think this is for Phyllis. How do you maintain several programs and avoid the fear of not doing them all perfectly or even well?
One, I don't know what perfectly means. I wouldn't recognize it if it was delivered to my door in a box with string. I used to kid and say I'm going to write a book called All My Life I Wanted to Be Prefect. At the beginning, I came into OA first, and when I had to go on a food plan, they told me that I couldn't drink. I said, you can't do that. And, that's when I found out that I drank too much. And initially, I tried to do all three at one time. I finally made the decision for me in my life, this is the program that I concentrate on, because this is the one that I'm most likely to get into trouble with. I've been around so many years, I've seen amazing number of people to whom that happens. I don't want it to be. I haven't got the strength. So I just stick to OA.
Last year, I lost 90 pounds very quickly and gained 35 to 40 pounds back. I could not relate to the negativity that I felt from OAers who had not lost weight. I don't want to use again over this help.
I guess I could relate to this person very much because I lost all that weight and I've gained some back. And we just have to focus. What I'm doing is focusing on me and trying to understand what's going on inside and realizing the back and forth all the time and how easy it is to slip and hearing. I'm so glad to hear from Phyllis, who's been around for longer than I'm alive. No, not really. not really, if I'm being honest, but okay. This is my hardest struggle in my life, and for many people. So, okay, face it. That's true. Just, I'm trying to be honest. It was simple for me to let go of all that weight, but it was never easy, and it's not easy to stay there. Even though we know it's not an intellectual thing, because I know I'm healthier. So, if we focus on other people's negativity, that doesn't help us. It doesn't help us. So it's going back to loving myself, keeping my heart open, being compassionate toward others as much as I can, and understanding everyone is struggling. Everyone's struggling.
Those people who have not made it are very, very unhappy people. Especially if they keep coming back to program and they don't pick it up, you know, right away. And the best thing that you can do is say, if you're interested, give me a call. You know, I'd be very happy to talk to you.
Okay. I have so much fear, all in caps, to be totally honest with the men's to my sister who is not in program, in any program. What do I do?
First of all, are you really up to that step? Is that, you know, usually people, we want to go jump at everything and say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, and then be relieved. If you're feeling good about it, talk with your sponsor. Talk with a friend and find out, tell them how you feel and what it entails and what you're afraid of. The one thing I will tell you is that very often when you go to somebody and you say, I'm sorry for blah, 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 they say, I don't remember that.
This is for Charlotte. How do you tune out your ego and listen for God?
I think when I'm centered, I know what's God and what's ego. Or maybe I don't know what's God, but it sounds like it's not egoish. You know, it's when I feel like I know it and I'm really attached to knowing it, maybe that's not really God. And who knows what God is? I mean, God, I believe God's in all of us. It's that pure, loving, compassionate voice. So it's part of me, but it's the God part of me. So if I'm centered and it feels right, I kind of sit with it. Like if I make a decision or have a thought, maybe I wait a day or I wait an hour and see if it still feels right. Does this feel like it's my ego? Or if I'm angry, it's usually my ego, right? Because I don't think God would be so angry. So I just, if it doesn't feel comfortable, then I trust that and I wait. But I don't always wait, so I make mistakes. So, okay. So there's another amends. That's it. For me, it's being centered and being really honest. And there's that little voice that says, you could tell, I swear. You'll be able to tell. You know. You know. I believe we all have that inside.
And this is for Phyllis. What do you include in your morning prayers, and how do you pray at mealtime?
In the morning, I read maybe two or three of the little, you know, the little prayer books. I have 24, all different, you know, and sometimes I turn to a page, and if it doesn't work, I turn to another page. And until I find something on which I can zero in, I also go over my plan for the day, and then at mealtime, I invite God to have lunch with me, especially if I'm having lunch by myself. And that seems to work. That seems to work.
You know, back to the question I just answered, for me, I also thought of, I asked God for a sign. Show me some signs that I'm in the right direction. And then I just look for them. Could be a song, could be a license plate, could be someone calling me, could be something, but some kind of sign.
How can I stop worrying about loved ones?
Is it doing you any good? I get kidded by my husband, and he says that I'm a worrier. And on a certain level, I am. I said, but that's part of my religion. That's what I was taught to do. You worry, you know. But it does. Yeah. He's Italian, so he doesn't know. But the worrying wastes the now. The now is the most important time of my life. I don't want to waste it. You don't know what's ahead. You knew what happened back there, but you remember I said, we threw it all out. And so that's gone. I'm not going to worry now because that doesn't help. It's not going to help the other person, and it surely is not helping me.
And then I go back to if I have a little faith in God, then that helps because I have faith that it will work out for the best, even though it doesn't look like the best. It's like a story, you know. Everyone knows a story where something good happens to the person, and the guy says, "Oh, you're so lucky," and goes, "Well, we'll see." And then something bad happens. "Oh, what a shame." "Well, we'll see." And it keeps changing back and forth. And I worry all the time. I didn't realize you don't really look Jewish, but okay. But she's from the Bronx. I'm from Brooklyn, so there's different forms of worry in the city. But I'm finding that. Jung said if we don't look at our shadow, it meets us as our fate, which is whatever we're afraid of or worried about. It comes to us, I believe, in the form of a lesson. So for me, like right now with this relationship, I want stability, I want security, and all I get with this is in this relationship is today, maybe this hour. So it's a great lesson for me, and I'm beginning to accept that. It's silly. I'm worrying less. When I'm worrying less, I know God's there more. That's all. There's nothing you could do.
I just wanted to share with you an acronym that's been very important in my life. It's TRUST, T-R-U-S-T. And it means try really using step three.
Ah!
Okay. This is for both of you. I heard recently, I'll do whatever it takes to recover. What does that mean to you in terms of fear? How do you deal with it moment to moment?
Okay. You know, I'll do whatever it takes to recover. For me, that means listening to my sponsor and following her direction, which I don't always do. So I'm not having as much recovery probably as I'd like. But, yeah, it's like, that's what sponsors are so helpful for, because they help us along that road to recovery and listen to her directions, follow her suggestions, and, of course, the steps. But that's kind
read
of funny.
Read the big book.
Read the big book.
And read the steps. Again.
Do you have red flags for combating relapse? Do you know what the red flags are?
I know that I can be in places sometimes where there is a great abundance of food that I do not eat, and I have to work my program on it. I have to work my steps on it. I'm powerless over that. It has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me, because I don't know if I have the strength to come back, so I'm not going to do it.
For me, red flags are changing what had been working really well for me and not being so honest. And what really helps is planning. Like I told you, I was coming back from Zurich. I was asked to speak in Switzerland, and that's like chocolate town, right? So I had to plan. And I know if I eat a lot of protein, I get full and not so fat. So I just make sure that that's going to happen, whether it's me taking food with me or thinking ahead. And Am I a little afraid? Well, I think if I plan and I trust, not so afraid, but still a little afraid. I mean, I'm walking around all over looking at chocolate bars, but not so much. I even bought some chocolate bars back for family and friends, but they were wrapped. They were like in cellophane, you know, like three at a time wrapped. So it wasn't as likely that I would take one. Fully wrapped.
This is for Charlotte. Can you please talk a little bit about gaining weight while in program and how is that related to dealing with your fears and your honesty?
When I first started program and I was, the thing was no chocolate bars, right? That's my abstinence, bottom line. I was at a meeting and some guy comes up to me and he asks me, what's your abstinence or something? First of all, that's the stupid thing to ask, I think. But so I said no chocolate bars, and this is when I'm still very fat. And he goes, well, did you ever think maybe you should have no sugar and no wheat? And I thought, could you imagine what I thought? So I didn't really make him a friend. But you know what? He was right. That's how I took off weight. No, basically no breads, no sugar. And then I maintained for a long time. And then when I started saying, well, I could have a little of this and a little of that. Oh, my God. So I wasn't totally, I was, okay, I could have a little of this and a little of that. But then it became a little bit more of this and a little bit more of that. And that's how the weight starts coming back on. And at a meeting the other week, someone said, he's abstinent, but he has a losing abstinent plan or something. You know, it was like different. So I know to take this extra weight off, I have to go back to, for me, not everyone's like this, everyone's very different. I would serve myself well to go back to no breads and sugar. And it's like working myself up to being really honest about that. That's what really works for me, so I need to do that. We'll see.
That is all the time we have for questions. We got through most of them. This part of the workshop is devoted to the tool of writing. There should be paper on your tables if you didn't bring something to write with. There should be pens and paper available. Except for us up at the table here, we need some pens and paper. Immediately following our timed writing exercise, we will take a 10-minute break. When we return from our break, the floor will be open for 3-minute pitches, where members may share their writing with the group or pitch on the topic. Before we begin writing, I will read a passage from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And our writing is, the timer will let us know it's for 15 minutes. And when you come up to share, you will need to sign a release form that I will have right here, just so you know before you start to share, because that portion will also be taped. Chapter 5 from How It Works, Freedom from Fear. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem, or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him. Does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. And now we'll have 15 minutes to just write in quiet. Our timer, and I was informed during that if you need to take a break, you can do it, but we're not going to take a break because we're kind of over time. We went over time in the earlier part of the session, so we're just going to be able to give full time for sharing. We're going to begin sharing right now. There are 3-minute pitches. Kathleen, raise your hand. She's the timer, and so she'll show a sign to you to let you know that your pitch is over with. When you come up here, there's a paper here, very important, that's a release. If you want to share, you have to sign the release first before it's going to be on the podium. So please make sure you sign that you know that you're being recorded and that it's okay that your recording will be available to the public. Okay. So the floor is open for 3-minute pitches. And you may come up. Yes. Just kind of form a line over here and come up when it's, Introduce yourselves as you would at a meeting.
Hi, I'm Jerry, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jerry.
I have 4.5 years in program. This subject of freedom from fear, I think a lot of it, the big book talks about procrastination and sloth is, the four-letter abbreviation for procrastination. And what I tend to procrastinate is things that shouldn't be, like careers and building relationships. And with program, I procrastinate approaching a sponsee because I'm shy, I'm very afraid. And my fear of approaching people had to make progress. And unfortunately, one of the best treatments for fear is to do something that terrifies you, no matter how bad it is. So that's part of the reason I stepped up here. And it also has to do with turning off the tapes that we were grown up to condition with ideas and statements. And now as adults, they're the tapes that still exist. And our reactions are based on when we are cued by that tape. For example, this has never worked for me before. And what I find is that I'm 48. And what I'm referring to that this never worked before is something when I was 15. And half measures, half conquering fears, it has to do with half measures, because when I was heavy, I was almost 300 pounds, and I agreed I needed help, and I needed something more powerful than myself. But the half measure would be that I'd come to meetings 5 a week and then 2 a week, and I'd call in my food for 30 days and then do it every other day, and I would call in changes to my food from one good food choice to another, but I wouldn't call it in because I rationalized it in my mind. And what I've just recently found out is that when I'm changing frequently one good food choice to another good food choice, it's because I'm not managing my day. I'm not budgeting my time. because I'm crazy, because I haven't meditated and prayed. And, you know, I've always been a thinker, an analyzer. I'm an accountant by trade, and we analyze, we measure, we come up with percentages. And I believe in cognitive therapy, you know, where, okay, personalization is a cognitive thing that goes on in your mind. You attach other people's behaviors as a sign of you. And I agree to it intellectually, but I try to think myself into feeling that way. And if I keep repeating that thought enough, I'll start to stop taking things personally. But it doesn't work that way. You know, I need to go out and talk to 100 people and try to take it less personally. And then, you know, the job of my dreams, you know, I can't get that if I procrastinate the work and the interview and the preparation. In other words, I get what I sell for. So, you know, I had disappointments. I took the CPA exam twice. The second time I came very close, but I didn't take it a third time because I didn't want to spend more time. But thanks for letting me share.
Make sure you sign the paper. And Kathleen will hold up a sign to let you know when your time's up.
Hi, my name is Ziva, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Ziva.
Thank you so much, all of you, for your service. I got a lot from your shares. It was an interesting exercise. Just to qualify, I've been in the program over 30 years, and I'm only 6 years abstinent, so you can do the math. I had two things. Number one, I listed my fears, and I wrote it down in Hebrew, because after living here for 30 years, I live in English, but Hebrew is an emotional language. For me, English is an intellectual language. So writing it in my language already made me honest with myself. And I listed 10 fears. And then I looked at them and I realized what I already know. It wasn't like a revelation now, that all my fears are based in the future. Each one of them had to do with the future. So what I did then, I went one by one and I wrote down about the present. And in the present, none of those fears exist, except one that has to do with a relationship, but we communicate in a way that the fear is not based in reality. It's based in my past. So it's really fascinating to me every time I do work on fear that it's either based in the past or based in the future. And what I need to do in order to come back to the moment is to pray and meditate. So I ended my writing by asking God to just help me stay in the moment, because I think catastrophizing was in my DNA. My mother survived the Holocaust, and her entire family perished, she found out, in one day. So bad things happened to her, and that's how we grew up. A catastrophe can happen any second. In 2 seconds, we can have an 8.8 earthquake, and we are gone. That's how I grew up. So for me, this whole spiritual practice is really changing my DNA. And for me to be able to sit down and write 10 fears and then make a list of 10 ways in which those fears are non-existent, and then end it with a prayer, that's what recovery is for me. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Stacy, a recovering food addict, compulsive overeater. Oh, it's so good to be here. You know, I actually love public speaking, and I really didn't know if I wanted to get up and share because I'm exposing myself, and that's vulnerable. But I figured I've listened to so many of these tapes over the 11 years, and, you know, I think I've come to 9 birthday parties. The 2 I haven't been to, I've made sure I've listened to the tapes, and I hear so much. And so I figured maybe somebody can relate to my fear, and so that's why I'm willing to share. So I wrote, okay, a humor in the beginning. God, now that I've emptied my bladder yet again, please help me to write with honesty and quickly, because, you know, I had to run to the toilet. Okay, but here we go. My fear is over the abstinence definition, restarting the date yet again, or carrying on. And am I doing the right thing? I'm sure people-pleasing come into play. Am I doing the acceptable thing? What do others do? What do others think? Is it what others do? I mean, it's so convoluted for me. Well, here are many ways of tackling, am I abstinent? Let me see. I don't have my glasses and it's hard to read. Well, I hear many ways of tackling, am I abstinent? For sure, I'd like to be abstinent from sugar 100% of the time. That's what is my biggest trigger. That white, powdery stuff is like heroin to me. And yes, flour is also white and powdery, and, you know, the caffeine are close seconds, but sugar is the biggest deal and problem for me. Yet I've taken a bite, which leads to eating with zest and zeal, more than just one bite. If it was one bite, I'd call it a slip. Easy, done with for me. But when it turns into the 4 or 5 weeks over the holidays, that seems impossible. We must restart, right? So let me just skip. So clearly, not just one bite. I definitely feel a bite is, okay, I just said that. But I end up going on eating sugar for 4 or 6 weeks. And then I believe I definitely have to restart that abstinence. So then what happens? I just wanted to write about this. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to keep taking that 30-60-day chip. And yes, embarrassing. I asked myself, why can't I string the 3 years together like I did my first 3 years in program 11 years ago? So yes, I beat myself up. Is that helping me? You know, the perfect need. And then I hear others tell me, oh, I don't restart my date no matter what. And okay, I like that idea, as I hate feeling like a failure, defined by my failure being, you know, oh, I have to have a new date. But how can I say I am abstinent if I was eating sugar for more than my one bite? I can't. And for me, God says we can come clean, we can come fresh. So that's always been my attitude. It's okay to have a fresh new start, right? So anyways, the fears, why me? What's wrong with my spiritual connection? That's one of my biggest things. As I just totally know this is a spiritual program, period. Where's my spiritual connection? I know that's what I need to always ask myself. What happens? I get, oh, dear, my time's up. Okay, I'll wrap it up by saying I get too busy with family, with friends, with anything. And one time, you know, when I went a whole new year, it was keep coming back. That was my abstinence. Well, you know, I'm in it right now. I'm trying to figure it out. I have a whole other page I'll read you if you want to hear it. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, I'm Roxy, and I'm compulsive overeater.
Hi, Roxy.
Hi. I have 5 years in this program, and it's been just miraculous for me. Thank you all. I got a lot out of your shares, and I'm just glad we're all here. I'm not a big public speaker, so to get up here, my heart's beating fast. But I did want to share because I know that my recovery depends on how much I'm willing to participate in, you know, revealing myself and listening to other people. So I'll read what I wrote, and I started out, freedom from fear. Faith leads to courage. So as I attend this workshop, I'm getting in touch with a lot of my fear and anxiety. It seems like at many times I'm very filled with anxiety. A big reason is all this fear, it was one of the big reasons why I overate. It was to squish it, to make, it was just like taking a drug. Like if I ate sugar, then I wouldn't be as fearful. So when I stopped the food, there came the anxiety, and I could really see what was wrong with me. Besides, anger also came up. I've got in touch while I was writing with some of the fears that, you know, that come to me. And some, I think one of my biggest fears, I have grown children, but I'm always afraid something's going to happen to them. So that's one of my big fears. Or to somebody else that I love in my family. I fear that I'm not good enough, that I'm not perfect enough, that I'm not honest enough, and that I fear that I'm too self-righteous a lot of the time, and that I don't do enough, and I can't finish projects. One of my big ones is I won't have enough of everything. When people talk about this in the program, not enough love, not, you know, of course the first one was food, but it's just about money. And there's no reason for me to fear money, but I fear these things. So it's feeling insecure. So why do I feel this? Well, to get to the solution, I believe that it's a lack of faith. And when my connection with a higher power isn't there, then I just, you know, I succumb to doing this. But what I got out of today's session, which was really helpful, is you do have a choice, and I can choose to believe that, you know, that God's taking care of me and that everything's just right. I don't have to be in the fear. I have a choice. I can believe that. I read a book once that I thought was really powerful. And the three things, this guy had a near-death experience and came back, and then he shared the message that he got while he was kind of on the other side, that you are loved and that you can't make a mistake and that there's nothing to fear. And that's really powerful. That's a nice affirmation I like to keep around. So thank you very much. My time's up, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Courtney S., a compulsive overeater. Sign first, please. And I am a low-bottomed fear addict. I will have nothing if I don't treat my relationship to fear as a debilitating addiction. I have 7 days of abstinence from engaging with the dark shadow that has followed me around my whole life. I came up to share because I am triggered. It started a couple of days ago, but I've been successfully sort of maintaining my personal space and maintaining a boundary of keeping that shadow at a distance. And as I say, I'm triggered in these last days, and in particular, something came up this morning that I've not been able to address because I'm here. So I haven't been able to address it in ways that I might with my sponsor or whatnot, not just yet. But it occurred to me, and I have worked through step one, but it occurred to me that this may be where step two comes in for me. I'm working with the literature and recognizing, at least intellectually, what is being asked of me. From step two, and they're just puzzle pieces on the floor right now. I haven't really been able to engage thoroughly in step two just yet, and so it occurred to me that perhaps inviting in God or a higher power of my choice, which has in the past been tricky, but perhaps Saturday at the birthday party, when I'm going through what I'm going through, perhaps this is the opportunity for me to ask that entity come in and just be with me. I'm not on step three. I don't know that I can turn anything over to anyone just yet. But I can ask to not be alone on the day. And so that's what I'm doing. And I thought I would take the opportunity to use this to share that with you. So thanks very much for letting me share. And thank you for your attention.
Hello, Julia, compulsive reader.
Hi, Julia.
And I do really, really appreciate all the kind words you said and insightful. I really believe this, that more people have come to God through 12-step programs to a true, deep connection to God than any of those other religions. I was able to very quickly fill a whole page of fears And I sat with them for a little bit. And one of the last one, well, I can get to those later, but here was my solution. God, thank you from the bottom of my heart, which is the source of me and which is where you connect to me and inspire me and give me strength, for giving me the awareness of you and the ability to connect to you, to gain peace and serenity and knowingness that you are always with me, to guide my way and allow me to do your work of loving, helping, serving, caring, and supporting others. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for giving me the willingness and ability to meditate daily, to make direct contact with you, then and at any and every moment, every day. Thank you for all the ways you speak to me to show me the direction I need to take to walk through fears and find serenity. Thank you for giving me fears to remind me when I need to turn to you. Thank you.
I guess the pattern is to sign first. I will sign first. Hi, I am Marilyn, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marilyn.
Thank you for your loving and powerful shares. I am up here because I want to be thankful and give of service, of courage, strength, and hope. Came into program 3.5 years ago. My life, my existence, fear. Lived it, loved it, learned it, taught by a Jewish home. Fear is good. Worrying is good. Worry more. Eat more. And the reason I came up here was I was writing. And I have fears. There's stuff at home that's scary. But somehow they're like removed from me. That's a miracle. Came in here 95 pounds heavier. I had a relapse back in May, and I was scared, fearful. I'm going to gain all this back? Oh, crap. And I became willing again by saying, okay, there's tools. What do I have to do? And now I've lost almost what I've gained, but I've actually gained a lot more. I have spirituality, coming from Jersey, that's hard to do. And it's really a miracle. And it's a gift that I'm writing and actually being, yeah, I'm fearful, but I have tools now to deal with that. And I also come from a wonderful genetic gene pool that my mother, rest in peace, was morbidly obese, and she was in OA for 20 years. And I said, I'm not going to be her. Loved her, an only kid, best friend. I'm not going to be her. I'm her. And I'm actually proud to be her. And my New Year's resolution, which I never do, I never want to do, but this time I'm proud. Is it time? Oh, no. And that I am proud to do is I am a grateful compulsive overeater. And there's a lot of miracles that I'm extremely thankful for because I know how to deal with fear. I know to face it. I know that fear is lessons. It's being humble. It's not being angry. I used to be angry and be like those reality shows they say back east. It's like, oh, they're not true. I'm that person. You know, the ones you laugh at, you know, I'm from Jersey shows. It's like, I'm that person, angry, throwing the table, throwing things out, because I didn't know how to be happy. I didn't know that I was worth it. And I was afraid how to be happy, how to love myself. And through this program in particular, I really have a lot to be thankful for. And I just want to say that thank you for letting me share. Thank you for being here and having courage, strength, and hope. So.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Mary.
I have coming up on 20 years of abstinence, and I've given away more than 200 pounds. And I'm not from New York. I'm a third-generation Angelino. As I was listening to the Ask It Basket questions, a lot of things came up for me, and so I wrote some of my answers. Besides 20-plus years in program, I have 30 years with a spiritual advisor, and so I've kind of learned how to deal with fear. And this is how I answer the questions and how I deal with fear. Upon awakening in the morning, I give thanks for another day of life, and then I surrender that day to whatever God has in store for me. I remind myself and God that my only responsibility is the footwork. The results are not mine to control, so I have only to do the next right thing as I'm led to do it. The catch is that I must choose the right thing that has been laid out for me. I don't always do it perfectly, but only God is perfect. And surprise, I'm not God. So I have to let go of perfectionism and stay out of the results. That means stay out of my own way sometimes. This means that I can be calm in the face of another's anger or despair, knowing it's not about me, but about themselves usually, about what they're thinking or feeling inside at the moment, that may have been triggered by a word, a sight, a sound, a smell, a texture that recalled something or some earlier hurt in them. And it's easier for them to project it out than to deal with it within, because it may be necessary for it to flare out in order for it to be dealt with at all. So I can let it come to me and over me, because that may be necessary for them to deal with whatever hurt they're dealing with. And I can't be afraid of making amends, because it's important for me to confront my mistakes and the harm I've done to others. But their acceptance of my amends is not necessary for my growth and healing. It's important for me to make the amends, but it's not important whether they accept it or not. And I end each day with at least 5 gratitudes, because that helps me stay in an attitude of gratitude.
He's our last speaker. Last time, sorry. That's okay.
Hi, my name is Greg. I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Thank you all for your service. I've been in program for about 7 years. I've been absent for 6 and maintaining a 50-pound weight loss. And I'm so grateful for this panel and this topic, because I am a person who at any time can give you like 20 fears off the top of my head. I am not a carbon-based person. I'm fear-based. And I'm just a person, I just deal with a lot of fear. Like even like coming up here, I don't want to speak. I am a person who I volunteer to be of service. And I'm working a prize booth. I've never worked a prize booth before. I don't know what I'm supposed to do, but I'm afraid. You know, and for me, I've really learned a lot of tools in this program to help me deal with fear. You know, my sponsor's been so great, also another fear-based person, and she suggests, you know what, you just have to show up. You just get yourself there, and God is going to take care of the rest. And that, to me, is absolutely amazing. It's like I show up, walk up to the podium or lectern or whatever this is, and I open my mouth, and God speaks through me, and that's all I have to do. You know, when I am feeling really afraid, you know, I can bookend things, and so I will call somebody before, and then I do the thing I'm afraid of, and then I call somebody afterwards. And for me, that just helps me to actually take those actions to get through the fear. You know, it's like praying and involve somebody else is just so helpful to me, because on my own, I will just stay at home and think about it and ruminate about my fears, and I can spend so much more energy thinking about my fears and worrying than actually taking the action that I'm afraid of. Typically, the action will take 2 minutes, maybe 5, but I will spend an entire day thinking about it, and that to me is crazy making. Another tool that I also use is my God box. When I have fears, I write it out on a piece of paper, and I put it inside my God box. And that physical act of giving it to my higher power, it just, it lifts it for me. Not always the first time, sometimes maybe the second or third time, but saying a little prayer, putting it in my box, it's like I'm letting it go. And my box, I can't take anything back out of, and so like it's physically committed to God. And to me, that is just a huge relief. To know that I don't have to be in control. And I think the last thing that somebody else had also touched about was, you know, I just have to focus on the next right action. You know, I am in the midst of many different things in my life right now, and, you know, I just have to do what's in front of me. If I start thinking about the end result, I just overwhelm myself with fear. But all I have to do is what's in front of me right now. And right now I'm just at this birthday retreat. I am not at home dealing with my work. I'm not dealing with a remodel of our apartment, you know, a dog, a partner, you know, any of that stuff. And so it's like I can just focus on this and that's it. And to me, that's just a huge relief because it's just one step after the next. And I don't have to make myself crazy. So thank you all.
Thank you all for participating in the workshop. And I've heard this question a couple of times, so I'm just going to ask Phyllis to repeat what TRUST, the acronym for TRUST.
Try really using step three.
Try really using step three. Okay.
Can I pull out another?
There's another one. What?
Another one.
Thank you. After a moment of silence, is there a volunteer who will lead us in a prayer of their choice?
I'll do the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it and you're worth it. Thank you.